Well, we continue our look at the Proverbs, and we're in Proverbs chapter 5 today. And each week, as we go through this together, we look at an American proverb. Today's is this: it takes two to tango. So think about that. It takes two to tango. What comes to mind as you think about that proverb? Here's what the definition looks like. When two people work as a team, they are both responsible for the team's successes and failures. Listen to this story lining up with this proverb. Look how crooked the linoleum is along the edges of the wall. It looks just awful. I never said I was an expert in laying linoleum. Besides, it takes two to tango. Well, just what do you mean by that? Well, you're the one who gave me the measurements. If the job turned out badly, it was just as much your fault as it was mine. Maybe so, but if you'll remember, I wanted to hire a professional to do the job. You were the one who thought we should save money by doing it ourselves. I guess we both learned a lesson. Next time, we'll know better. So maybe that's what comes to mind for you as you think about that proverb, it takes two to tango. But I was thinking about that as we're looking at Proverbs 5, and I entitled this lesson today, Mrs. Robinson. If you remember the movie, The Graduate, where Dustin Hoffman is being seduced by Anne Bancroft, Mrs. Robinson, there's a humbling bit of understanding as you think about the fact of how easily we can be enticed. And so, as we're looking at Proverbs chapter 5, hopefully you and I will draw from the wisdom of this. Point number one is depart from the woman in the street. Look at verses 1 and 2 with me as we start the study here. My son, be attentive to my wisdom. Incline your ear to my understanding, that you may keep discretion and your lips may guard knowledge. And so this wise father, once again in this familial way, pulls his son aside. And the wise father here is marshaling all the essential terms to sum up his call to wisdom. He's telling his son, be careful, be attentive, understand, I'm trying to protect you from something here. And hopefully his son will listen, because look at verse 3. For the lips of a forbidden woman drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. And so seduction usually begins with this deceptive flattery. Lips of honey should be part of true love and marriage. My communication with my wife should be just this, that her encouragement, her the upbuilding of her life, the edification she should find in me. She should be getting texts from me that communicate love, that communicate her attractiveness to me, and vice versa. We should not look outside our home for that. And make that the case for your life. If you're thinking about encouraging somebody, look to encourage your wife, gentlemen. Wife, if you're thinking about encouraging somebody, your husband needs it. Allow the Lord, if he needs to be humbled, allow the Lord to be the one that humbles him. And see what God does with that. Well, look at verses 4 and 5. But in the end, talking about this foreign woman, this forbidden woman, but in the end, she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps follow the path to Sheol. So in the end, literally, the future of tasting her lips is like wormwood. It's not going to be sweet. And that's a symbol of suffering. And a sword here is a symbol of death. And what she does is she's going to travel down the road with you to death and to hell. And don't go there. Even if you're listening to this today, don't flirt with disaster. Don't head down this road. I may be the one voice right now that you need to hear. Don't buy the lies. Verse 6. She does not ponder the path of life. Her ways wander, and she does not know it. So her steps are willfully and predictably, they stagger here and there, as she has no concern for the abyss ahead. She's not worried about that. And I'm saying to you, don't go down that path with her. And then we see a line of verses where it's starting to describe something here. And so take in the picture. And now, O sons, listen to me, and do not depart from the words of my mouth. Keep your way far from her. You know where you're going when you head down that path. Don't go there. And do not go near the door of her house, lest you give your honor to others and your years to the merciless. You don't want to go there. It's a waste of time, and it will end up being a waste of years. You do not want to go down that path. We see, he goes on and he says, lest strangers take their full fill of your strength and your labors go to the house of a foreigner. And so don't go that way. The consequences of this sin may include slavery as a commuted punishment instead of death that should have come for adultery. In that case, the merciless was the judge and the others were the masters to whom all of the energy of youth was directed in slavery. All personal wealth was lost to outsiders, and one served in a stranger's house, helping him to prosper. And so you don't want to go down that road to slavery. Verse 11, and at the end of your life, you groan when your flesh and body are consumed. This could be a reference to venereal disease or to the natural end of life. And at that point, filled with an irreversible regret, and the ruined sinner vainly laments his neglect of listening to the warning and that sad disgrace. So don't go there. And you say, verse 12, how I hated discipline and my heart despised reproof. I did not listen to the voice of my teachers or incline my ear to my instructors. I am at the brink of utter ruin in the assembled congregation. And so these verses, as a toll here, they describe that high price of infidelity or unfaithfulness. And the focus here is on the guilty suffering of that person who yields to that lust rather than obeying God's law. And you contrast the proper response to such temptation when you think about the case of Joseph. So let's jump down to verses 21 and 22 as we continue here. For a man's ways are before the eyes of the Lord, and he ponders all his paths. The iniquities of the wicked ensnare him, and he is held fast in the cords of his sin. So the Lord sees all that goes on and what man does, and in mercy, he will withhold immediate judgment. He's allowing the sinner time to repent or be caught in his own sin and then learn from it. Verse 23, he dies for lack of discipline, and because of his great folly, he is led astray. So his final undoing is going to come about because he has spurned the instruction. What could have saved him, he puts aside. And so as you think about that, and you see even in this psalm or in this proverb, a sandwich here of unfaithfulness, and then in the middle of it, that faithfulness that we'll look at in a second, and then at the end, one more time, a warning. And so he, point number two, he wants us to delight in the wife at home. Look at verse 15. Drink water from your own cistern, flowing water from your own well. So that cistern or well, this is what is to be the source of fulfillment. Verses 16 and 17. Should your springs be scattered abroad, streams of water in the streets, let them be for yourself alone and not for strangers with you. So these words here that are euphemisms, and it refers to the male procreation capacity with the idea that the foolish, as a fountain, scattering precious water, is a picture of the wastefulness of sexual promiscuity. And the result of that indiscriminate sin is called streams of water in the streets. That's a graphic description of street children, illegitimate street children of harlotry. Rather, Solomon is saying, let them be your own and not the children of such immoral strangers, so that you would be wise in what you're doing with your life. Look at verse 18. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth. So God offers to bless procreation, male procreation, when it is confined to one's wife. It should be known that in spite of that sinful polygamy of David and Solomon, as well as the disastrous polygamy of Rehoboam, the instruction here identifies God's ideal as one wife. One man, one woman, lifetime. And then verse 19, a lovely deer, a graceful doe, let her breasts fill you at all times with delight. Be intoxicated always in her love. That graceful doe, the doe has this graceful beauty in her face and form, and is often used in poetry times for the beauty of a woman. And then the breasts there, that's the imagery of affection. We should not, in the boundaries of marriage, that we rest in that. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's a beautiful thing. And then verse 20, why should you be intoxicated, my son, with a forbidden woman and embrace the bosom of an adulteress? So that behavior is presented as having, there's no benefit here. And it's when you justify the foolishness of that, it's senseless. And so let's not go down that road, is what he's saying. So once again, the path, the road, is going to lead to destruction. Don't go there.